Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Last winter, everyone was talking about the plans to convert the vacant Wonder Bread factory on 4th Street, just north of 670, just north, into an ecosystem for the creative class. Although the pace has slowed in the development somewhat of Wonderland, the team behind it is still on track with an opening date around early 2012. So joining us today for an update and primer about the operation is Adam Brulé. He's the new executive director of the project. They just announced that yesterday. He's also a founder of Wonderland, president and founding member of Couchfire Collective, secretary of the Board of Trustees for the Ohio Art League. He is an artist as well, and his work has been exhibited in several galleries, universities, and centers of art in Ohio. So my first question to Adam will be is, when does he sleep? He's a very busy guy. Welcome to the show, Adam.
Thank you.
Coming up later are two more of the founders of Wonderland and its board president. So stay with us. And if after a few minutes you have questions or comments, you can give us a call at 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Or go to Facebook or Twitter, Ann Fisher, WOSU. Adam, tell me, really, how are you going to manage everything? Is there anything you're giving up in this process?
There's going to be things that I have to give up, one being most of my design company work. I've definitely had to put a little bit of a back burner on the artwork just in the startup phase, but a lot of those things are essential. A lot of the activities that I'm involved with are essential to what we're doing with the project also. So I've got a pretty high motor. I'm not worried about burning out anytime soon. Hopefully I can just manage the time well.
So tell me, what are you trying to do with your time then? What is the executive director's job at this point?
Right now, the biggest thing, we realized a while ago that there were two ways that we could do this. We could do it quickly or we could do it correctly. And the past couple months, you know, in this sort of quiet stage, we've been behind the scenes doing a lot of organization and trying to figure out what are our core values and what are we essentially trying to do with the building. Things that when we originally came up with the idea seemed like great ideas, but then we had to formalize them. My job now, now that the announcement is out and I've kind of been helping with this along with the other founders, is to organize this and get the vehicle going in a direction so that we're firing on all cylinders, that all the different initiatives that we've started, and that goes across, you know, programming and facilities, communications, all of our marketing-driven, you know, initiatives, our fund development, and then just general communication with potential tenants and with each other. I'm kind of trying to oversee that and give it direction and form.
Originally, you all were talking about a start date at the end of this year, and that's changed obviously significantly. What was the main reason for that?
I think it was kind of like this big, like, oh my gosh moment that we had probably right about the time we bought the building. We stepped back and we said, okay, this is a great idea and we're running really fast. And we brought in this board of trustees and they really helped us take a second and look at things and have us write things down. And I think all the founders kind of stepped back and said, okay, we could do it quickly or we could do it correctly. And we really need to do it correctly because this is such a big project and there's so many people that are involved in it that we really need to make sure that we're going to do things right. So we had to take a step back and really assess the situation in a really in-depth manner, and we've done a pretty good job of that. And like I said, now it's just a matter of executing all the plans that we've been setting up.
Another element that was suggested at the outset and has, I think, been abandoned at this point is starting things up early on in other locations and then bringing them to Wonderland when it was opened officially.
That's in our discussions, we've talked about how Wonderland is like a whole bunch of moving pieces all at one time that we're trying to coordinate into this sort of, for those familiar with Voltron, that's kind of what it is. It's trying to get all these different parts that are already working individually to kind of coalesce into one opportunity. So there are many opportunities that are already happening that Wonderland is involved with, things that we're doing, things that we're helping organize, helping promote. It's just a matter of being able to get all those things to exist in one location that is going to take a little bit of time. So there's already ongoing progress.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guest is Adam Brulé. He's the new executive director of Wonderland. That is the name of the organization that is evolving at the former location of the Wonder Bread Factory. I don't know about you, but I'm still missing the savory aroma of the bread I never eat. Are you going to bring that back with everything else? You're going to have the sign, right?
Yes, we are definitely going to have the sign. It's part of the purchase of the building and part of, you know, hopefully our grand opening will be a relighting of the sign. But the bread smell, we've got a couple different ways that we're going to work with that. Okay. Some of our retailers have come up with some creative ideas. And yes, we get a lot of requests for the bread smell.
Okay. If people want to know more about it, they can go to your website and they can look at pictures and that kind of thing. But when you look at where you are in the process right now, how do you measure it for people? You're a third of the way through? You're a quarter of the way through?
In some ways, I can say we're halfway there. And in other ways, I could say that we're really just beginning. There are milestones that are set up that in our timeline from now until open, we've kind of started looking at this point right now as the start of a 15-month timeline. That's not to say that there hasn't been a whole lot of work done already, but really in our campaign to open the building, this is kind of a beginning where we're actually going through phases of doing what you need to do to open a building and create the organization.
You have been very transparent. I mean, it's been out there from the beginning. You've talked to people openly. You had that big meeting in Grandview Heights last winter, I guess February.
January, February, yeah.
Why did you decide to do it that way? Because a lot of organizations play it close to the vest.
Yeah, I'll answer. It has a lot to do with the sort of youth, the sort of vigor that we as founding members move with. And it was kind of – there's that moment back when we first got the board where they said, like, have you guys really thought about this? A lot of the things we do, it's not that we don't think about it. It's that we think about it while we're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the reason that we had to slow down is that we had to actually think about it the way that an investor would think about it or somebody sponsoring it or donating to it. There's a lot of advantage to the way that we started things. You know, we were moving quickly and we were making fast decisions. And now we're finding out that investors and people that want to give to the program are seeing that as a breath of fresh air. You know, they're looking at that as like, wow, this isn't being done the same way that everything else has been done. And these guys know how to move and get things done. So we're trying to maintain that while at the same time, with the transparency, make sure that we're responsible about how we're doing everything.
Tell us about the team you've put together. Who's helping you?
A lot of people. And actually, that's going to grow considerably over the next couple weeks. The original founders, there were five of us initially, six of us initially that were kind of talking about how this project would work. That was the group that launched back in January. Since then, we sort of built a team of people that we knew were responsible business leaders, but at the same time had an understanding of how we move, appreciated the way that we do things. So we have, retail specialists and people that have been on boards before, CPAs, developers, people that understand construction, people that understand green consulting. And then with the public, I mean, there's been such an outpouring of people wanting to be involved. We literally, back in January, when we announced that we were going to have this involvement form online that people could fill out, you know, we got over 1,000 responses from people saying, I just want to help. And, you know, and then they listed the ways that they can help. And over the last 6 months, just trying to sort through that and figure out what we have has been quite a task, like very daunting.
Have there been any aha moments when you're looking through those suggestions or at the meeting last winter when like 100 or more people arrived to tell you in person what they thought? Any moments, anything that you gleaned from those that really made a difference?
Yeah, I mean, that initial launch, when we had, you know, over 300 people show up to Junction View and pack into a room just to hear about the project, mm-hmm. That was definitely an aha moment of, wow, there are a lot of people that really want to see this happen. And that was also an aha moment of, there is a lot of scrutiny about how we're going to do things and a lot of eyes on the project. That was probably the first one that helped us slow down. But since then, there's been a lot of aha moments of just internally as we're talking and we're working with the board to go through what our original concept was. It's nice to see that the development of the idea hasn't stopped. In the last 6 to 8 months working with the board, all we've done is crisp up and add in and develop that that original concept to a way that's, you know, very dynamic and very it's still fresh and it moves quickly, but it's more solid and it has more arms and legs.
Have you heard from organizations and other cities around the country asking you how you're doing this, or do you know if people are following it? Because there's been a lot of Wonder Bread factories out there for sale, but none of them have been used for something like this, and really there's nothing quite like this as far as I could find.
Yeah, what we're finding is there's a lot of facilities that do portions of what we do, but as far as something that's all-encompassing in the drastic fashion that we're jamming things into a facility or building a community, it really hasn't – there hasn't been a facility that we can find that's 100% analogous. We've been doing a lot of looking at other facilities, learning about ways that other companies or organizations or facilities work. And trying to understand what they did wrong and what we can do right. We've gotten interest from other communities. Mostly we've been talking to places in Ohio that have a lot of interest, locally in Cleveland, Cincinnati. But there are a lot of other places that we'd like to visit, and we're always asking just the general public for input on facilities that they've been to, that they've experienced. Some of them really stand out, the Torpedo Factory in Alexandria, Virginia, mm-hmm. the Third Ward in Brooklyn, the RIC in Detroit, the Melwood, Kentucky Arts Center, I guess it's called. So we've heard a lot of information about the way these kind of things work, and we're kind of trying to take that and sort of break the mold a little bit.
Okay, time for our first break. If you would like to join the conversation about Wonderland, we have all the founders here. We have the president of the board of directors with us, and you can give us a call at 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu. You can Twitter us at Ann Fisher WOSU when you go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. I will not belabor that again. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
State Auto Insurance has supported the quality programming on WOSU Public Media for over 30 years and is now proud to support the Columbus Neighborhoods Project. Watch Columbus Neighborhoods with the Short North transformed from a rundown, forgotten part of the city into Columbus's center for arts and culture. So take a fresh look at one of Columbus's great neighborhoods, the Short North, re-airing on Thursday, October 14th at 9 p.m. and Friday the 15th at 11 p.m. only on WOSU-TV.
And you're listening to WOSU 820 NPR News. Tune in this afternoon at 2 o'clock for Talk of the Nation. It's Wednesday, so the political junkie is stopping by to discuss all things politics. Talk of the Nation from 2 until 4 on WOSU. And it's 50 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:20 this morning. A few clouds this morning. It should clear out this afternoon, leaving us with sunshine later today and a high of 68 degrees. A few clouds tonight and a low of 48. All Sides continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about Wonderland. It is the concept that will manifest in the old Wonder Bread factory on 4th Street. If you want to join the conversation, 614-292-8513 or allsides@wosu.org or all the rest. Joining us now are two more of the founders of Wonderland, and it's Andrew Dodson. He is sound engineer, music producer, and entrepreneur. He is president and co-owner of Central City Recording. He's active in the local music and arts scene. He's on the faculty at the Jazz Arts Group's Jazz Academy. He also sits on the board for Music Loves Ohio. That's a nonprofit group that programs things for organizations like Godman Guild and the YWCA. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And also Josh Quinn, he's with us as well. He is a founder of the project. He owns the Short North Boutique Tiger Tree with his wife, Nikki. Mm-hmm. I misspelled boutique and Nikki. He is also designs he also designs accessories under the banner Maxine Deer. He is an active arts promoter. And welcome to the show, Josh.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so we talked in the break, and I said I'm going to ask you. You certainly didn't decide all of this, you know, when the Wonder Bread Factory went on the market, but I was wrong, right, Andrew?
Kind of, yes and no. I think in Columbus, especially over the past 5 years or so, the concept of an art space in particular has been talked about a lot. Part of it was the art space survey that was done. Adam has looked at some other facilities as well. I mean, already Junction View exists. There's a couple other co-working type spaces. Mm-hmm. And so I think that a part of it was all of us kind of, you know, me coming from the music world and the retail world and business, all kind of saw how well those work for the art community. And, you know, we're a little bit envious. We said maybe we want to do stuff like that for our groups as well. But, you know, Adam and I, we know each other from working on a number of different events together. And one of the things we noticed doing the events is that, you know, when you have just an art event or just a music event, you get just art fans or just music fans. When you put everything together, you get all of these different crowds, and they have a chance to kind of commingle, and folks who wouldn't have otherwise gone to see a band might see a band, or who wouldn't have otherwise checked out an artist get to check out an artist. And when we mix in things like vendors to that whole mix, people doing small business craft type stuff or kind of curating stuff like Josh does, it's just a whole other element. So what we were trying to do is take the vibe of these different festivals that have kind of grown over the past few years and find a place that could house that energy 24/7, 365.
But Josh, it hasn't been done before. We talked about that earlier with Adam. So how do you know, or what's your sense about why this, number one, is needed and number two, could make it?
I think the overwhelming enthusiasm from everybody proves both of those things. I mean, to start with, it was just kind of a whim. It was something that we were all sort of working on our individual aspects of personally. And when this opportunity came about, we jumped at it. As far as the proof, I mean, I don't want to use a cliche and say the proof is in the pudding, but it's kind of the outpour of support and enthusiasm and people's willingness to jump on and help out is all the proof that we need to go forward.
Is there something about Columbus? Is the Columbus different? I mean, would this set it apart? Is there something about Columbus that makes people collaborate that way and makes it seem like a natural thing to do?
I think so, yeah. When I talk about why we ended up moving here from L.A. to open our shop, I always sort of use the phrase population chill factor. I think that there's a lot more people here than most people, especially outside of Columbus, recognize. And I think that that sort of environment is ripe for development and ripe to move forward culturally. So, yeah, I think that there's enthusiasm for creative ideas here, and I think that it's a market that is very affordable and easy to live in. And so it lets artists and first-time entrepreneurs and people like me opening their first shop an ability to access a large audience. You know, I could afford to open a large shop in Mansfield or something, but the audience isn't there. But comparatively to large cities, I've got a neighborhood like the Short North that's, mm-hmm. that's very, you know, metropolitan in a lot of ways and is very dense. And what I can get for the same entry versus, you know, Chicago or New York is tremendous.
There, let's talk about the concept. I think the idea of the cross-discipline collaboration, we talked a little bit about, you know, it's nice, it's a nice idea, but what ultimately is the ultimate goal of that. There has, I mean, there you have to sustain something like that, and it hasn't happened naturally necessarily anywhere else except in institutions like colleges and universities and that sort of place.
Well, it used to. I mean, I think that's what's interesting about it is that a lot of what we're doing is seems very modern, mm-hmm. Trying to sort of break the mold of a nonprofit organization or break the mold of mixed-use development. What's bizarre is that other neighborhoods don't seem to interact anymore. And so you'll have a store owner like me and the first floor of a mixed-use development, and there may be a great attorney upstairs, and when I need an attorney, I get a Yelp review, and I might drive up to 161. So it's sort of reintroducing, I think, this community where it's not forced interaction, but it's getting, you know, residents of that community who are coming in with the spirit of collaboration, who understand that they're there to be interacting with one another.
You know, I interviewed the biographer of Leo Castelli, the great galleryist from New York, and she wrote the story of his life, and it was fabulous. But one of the you echoed a lot of what I heard there just a minute ago, that his idea of supporting the artist and befriending the artist and making the artist important wasn't new. It's actually very old world, mm-hmm. the idea of helping artists instead of making them suffer.
It's actually
Adam?
It's something that we look at in terms of Columbus in the position that it's in and the time being, you know, sort of this world of Facebook and individuals being able to speak up and speak their mind and take part. It's kind of like a new renaissance, and that supporting the artist historically, Renaissance times was it worked really well. And even back then, I think it's funny that Josh is talking about this like it's a really old concept that we're bringing back. Even back then, it was in fashion for people that had means to work with each other, artists working with merchants and thinking of the merchants also as part of the culture that you're in. And, you know, with maybe the 1950s consumerism and, you know, just moving into what we traditionally think of as very American, you know, so going to a big store and buying from a shelf rather than thinking about who was making it or who was selling it as being part of your culture. Now all of a sudden we have something like the Short North as a prime example of all of a sudden you have a neighborhood that identifies the culture of a population. And now what we're trying to do is access that same power and say that, you know, all these things, the music, the retail, the arts, all of it's all part of our culture, and we're creating a cultural destination in one location. I think it is an old idea that we're bringing back and popularizing.
Leo Castelli said that he wanted to legitimize and validate American art, that mm-hmm. everyone was had their, you know, minds wrapped around European art and everything that was old and across the pond, but he wanted to legitimize American art. And it seems like, the other parallel is legitimizing local artists and local musicians and local creators as well.
Yeah, I just don't like the idea that we need to do that. I mean, I think that's a very Columbus thing, talking about what's unique about Columbus. I think, unfortunately, one of the traits is this almost bashful to a fault type of thing. I'm proud of all of our artists. I'm proud of the musicians that I work with, and I wouldn't put them in a different category than anybody coming out of Brooklyn or Silver Lake or wherever happens to be cool. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, going back to the building, I think for me the key is that there's this, you know, Facebook web thing, and, you know, my current facility, I go into my studio, and it's me and my musicians in my studio. And every once in a while, I'll walk down the street and talk to a couple of the shops, the merchants. I'm lucky to be neighbors with folks like Screened. And I can go down and talk with them about business and just bounce ideas off them. But there's still, I'm on a city block, and there's four of us there, and then it kind of goes off into the city. And I think that for me, the key of this building is that to get to my studio every day, I'm going to have to walk past these artists, and I'm going to have to walk through this retail area, and I'm going to see all these people, and we're going to see each other regularly. And I think that'll just inherently build this community that is kind of absent due to a lot of that seclusion that people live in these days.
I was surprised that you said you've got a list of 500 potential tenants already. Number one, I wanted to ask you, when you envision this, how many potential tenants total are you shooting for? Do you have any idea?
When we started, we didn't think that we would have 500 that instantly, and it became very apparent very quickly that, you know, and this is some of the we could do it quickly or we could do it correctly statement. When you have that many people showing interest, you kind of have to listen to all of them and, like, what are you interested in doing? And just listening to all the creative ideas that people are coming up with is it's amazing. All the things that we didn't think about at first that now we've had to go back and reconsider and really identify, well, what things are going to make this facility, you know, what ideas do we have to include or exclude, and how do we come up with policies that people can understand that transparently? It's amazing just looking at the breadth of the amount of stuff that people want to be part of this facility.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. When you talk about 500, well, one thing is you were talking about regulations or how the policies that you would use and operate under. What's that like, having to make up rules and regulations?
Coming from a BFA in printmaking background, it's amazing the amount of stuff that I've learned in the last year, and I think all of us could probably say that. Just knowing how these processes work and analyzing other situations that people have already had those experiences, listening to different business leaders and organizational leaders, you know, and people like Nancy Duncan Porter from when she started the North Market, listening to her say what worked, what didn't, and then going all the way into talking to potential funders and hearing what their concerns are. It's been a lot of work, and the work is by no means done. I mean, like I said, we're kind of just at the point where we're able to start enacting some of these things that we've been thinking about. But the breadth of it, there's no way I could say in a 2-minute speech all the stuff that we've gone over and thought about. It's insane.
Is there some master list of what you ultimately want to have? Is there some list that you don't want to deviate from? And
it's my wall in my studio covered with Post-it notes right now.
Yeah.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. What about relationships with local colleges and universities? Is that part of it? Because you talk about workshops, you talk about kind of a teaching environment too, a learning environment.
Yeah, I think a big part of it is an educational component, not necessarily in a here's a classroom, take a course type of way. But we want, you know, a big part of the idea is for retailers to try to help musicians or artists be a little bit more entrepreneurial, and for musicians or artists to try to help retailers be a little more creative and things like that. And I think that it would be a mistake on our part to not include the colleges. I don't know that it'll be a specific programming thing.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly kind of the next group of creatives is going to be coming from our high schools, colleges, universities.
And when you have the second largest college population in the country, if you don't pay attention to the colleges or speak with them, and we do frequently, if you don't speak with them, you're drowning yourself. Our constituents, our users are probably most likely college grads. And something that we're working really hard to do is solve that problem that Columbus has had for a while about attracting and retaining talent. And part of that is understanding, why did people come to college here in the first place, and what's causing them to leave, and how do we solve that so that they stay here? To some extent, we're finding ways to have that happen already. And Dodson mentioned earlier, in the last 5 years, this kind of general movement towards people wanting these sort of things. I think that that's the core of it, is just getting young talent to stay here.
Josh, down in the Short North, mm-hmm. what are folks saying? Because this is adjacent to, I kind of consider Italian Village part of Short North, but technically I guess it's not. But in any event, it's close enough. You can walk there. So what are folks saying down there along High Street?
Oh, it's tremendous excitement. Customer-wise, I get 5 or 6 people a day who come in just to ask if there are any updates on the project. But I think that other merchants realize that something like Wonderland increases the magnetism of the neighborhood. And so we're all very good in the Short North of having a collaborative spirit and understanding that, you know, you're greater than the sum of your parts. And so having a facility like Wonderland is, you know, when you've got four merchants on a block, people will come from a 2-mile radius. When you've got 10 merchants on a block, people will come from a 15-mile radius. When you've got 10 merchants and then Wonderland, you know, suddenly the radius of what people's willingness to travel increases tremendously. So everybody is very excited. They understand that this is a way – we do consider ourselves to be in the Short North, and it's a way to sort of reinvigorate the arts that I think a lot of people have been complaining about leaving the Short North. And what I really like about that, and what I think is a nice parallel to the project, is I haven't really figured out a PC way to say it, but I think that – what we're doing is kind of bottled arts gentrification. It's, you know, it's a path that happens all across the country where artists move into a neighborhood and they develop it and then they price themselves out.
Right.
We're able to have those galleries and studios and artists have access to what happens next. And so we can say, here's this great block of retailers and restaurants and a venue and all of these things that ordinarily you'd love to be in proximity to, but by your own work, you now can't afford to be in proximity to them, and we can offer that.
Yeah, and I think I think that the whole idea of expanding the Short North and moving east specifically because there's this nice big empty field right across the street from Wonderland, I think one of our goals is economic development for the whole mm-hmm. city and for our neighborhood. And I think that that's a huge draw to this particular facility is that it's close enough to the Short North and in the Short North, but it's also right on the edge, and there's a lot of opportunity to develop that and to define that. And I think that's one of the things people love about Columbus and this Wonderland project and our transparency. It all stems from this whole desire and to define what's next in the city, and I think that we'll provide an opportunity for that.
Another thing about Columbus, and it used to seem when I first moved here 20 years ago, it seemed like there was a parking lot every other block. Mm-hmm. Is the parking issue? It's a big problem. It's been a big problem in the Short North for a long time. Is parking a part of the?
Yes.
Okay. Lots of parking.
there's a lot of work we have to do on that still. Again, we have the advantage of there's a big empty area right across that could be developed into any number of things. Right now, it's just a matter of us trying to be good neighbors and listen to the people around us. We're trying to reach out to people and, you know, listen to them as much as we possibly can at this current point in time. We haven't started any construction and we don't have people coming in the building, so we don't know exactly what the traffic flows are going to be. We've talked to some of the area neighbors about how are we going to work once the traffic flow starts, talking with the city about how do we help control traffic so it's not speedy 4th Street going, you know, 40 miles an hour and then you got people walking around the neighborhood. All that's going to be a big work in progress, and we have a lot of work to do in that area.
Infrastructure development around something like this is often an issue. Are there talks with the city about the infrastructure surrounding?
They definitely have us on their radar, and with that big empty lot across the street, that's the biggest question.
Is that
mark.
The Jeffrey Place?
The Jeffrey Place, right?
Okay.
And not knowing what's going to happen with that is, I don't know that it's causing hesitation on the city's part, but we're kind of taking it up and saying, okay, we have to be responsible for starting the fire. Once the fire is going, then we can go to the city and we can say, these are the kinds of things that might be beneficial for the neighborhood. And the neighbors and the Italian Village Society and all those groups will be part of that discussion. You know, it's not Wonderland coming into the neighborhood and making all the decisions. It's, mm-hmm. you know, we really want to work with people to find out what's the best mutual solution to the problem.
Okay, we have to take another break. When we return, Brad Konya will be with us. He's the president of the board of Wonderland. We'll take calls and we'll get to emails as well. If you'd like to call us, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
We can be so closed in. And when you listen to WOSU, they address things from more than one point of view. It's a global point of view, and you realize that you are indeed a citizen of the world and not just a citizen of Columbus, Ohio. My name is Joyce Eubanks, and WOSU is my source for a world view.
You're listening to WOSU 820 NPR News. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, as part of our special election coverage, we'll hear from Lee Fisher, Democratic candidate for the U.S. Senate. He joins All Sides at 11, right here on WOSU 820.
Support for WOSU comes from Global Gallery, a nonprofit featuring fair trade coffee and handcrafts from around the world in the Short North at Easton and in Clintonville Commons on North High Street. Information at globalgalleryonline.org.
51 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:41. Clouds this morning. It should clear out this afternoon, leaving us with sunshine later today and a high right around 70 degrees. A few clouds tonight, a low of 48, sunshine, and a high of 72 for Thursday. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News. Thanks for joining us.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Joining us now, Brady Konya. He is president of the board of Wonderland. We also have still with us Adam Brulé. He's one of the co-founders and executive director for Wonderland, Andrew Dodson, and Josh Quinn, two other founders of Wonderland. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. We'll take a phone call with a fun question, and then we'll get to an email with the bottom line question. And Pat, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Well, hi. I just wanted to say thanks to your whole panel for all the work that they've done on Wonderland. It's fabulous. And I just wanted to also thank Adam for everything he does in the community. He helped us with our Dude, Where's My Hair poster, with a hair theater
Well, then
flyer.
This is the lovely Pat Wynn Brown speaking.
Hey,
Pat. The hair lady.
I'm all for the Wonderland. I really, really am. But I'm a little confused. I may have missed it. What is the timeline? What's happening now? What will be happening in the near future with activities, or where are you with it as far as is anybody?
You want to know when
there?
The party's going to be, don't you, Patty?
I want to know when I can come over there. And the other thing is, are they going to have like the Guinness factory has in Dublin, Ireland, where you can actually go to this machine and smell the beer? Can you have the bread smell waft through the entire place as we go through it? Those are my questions.
Okay.
First off, I want to say hi, Pat, and Wonderland is all about hair theater, too, so hopefully we'll be able to host you at some point. I'll answer the smell question first. We have some unique ideas that might help bring that smell back. Some of our potential retailers have developed some pretty interesting concepts on how to do that.
Great.
As far as the timeline goes, what we're working with right now is a 15-month timeline. We're shooting for New Year's of 2011 so that at the end of next year we have sort of a big opening party, relighting of the sign, that coincides with the bicentennial of the city. Where we're at now is sort of enacting a lot of the policies that we've been working with over the past 6 to 8 months. We're sort of setting things in motion. Our fundraising campaign has sort of softly launched just yesterday with an announcement about some of our fundraising efforts that I believe Brady will be talking about. And then from this point on, we're going to be reaching back out to all those people that have been waiting patiently on that involvement form, wondering, how did I sign up for something back in January and not hear anything? Well, the hope is that in the next, probably the next month and a half, that we'll be doing a lot of talking with those people, really getting a good idea of what potential tenants we have and how we're going to be completing the construction. We're also in the process of setting up our ways to interview our construction consultants and starting that process. We also have a lot of legal work that's being done. We have a legal firm that has signed on with us and been offering a lot of assistance. It's kind of all the boring stuff that's behind the scenes. And then in the meantime, we've sort of created a couple fun ways for people to interact with Wonderland while we're getting all that stuff done. In the next couple months, you should see a lot more updates as to our progress.
Well, I thank all of you for doing this. It's a tremendous asset to our city. I know that it's not an easy road that you've been on. So thank you so much. And I did fill out one of those forms, so I'm happy to help in any way that I can. So thanks, guys.
Thank you, Pat.
Thanks, okay. Pat.
Thanks, Pat. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We have an email from Stephanie now, and maybe, Brady, you can address this. We got into a little bit at the end of the last segment. Two questions from Stephanie. How do you pay for all this? And will all the galleries and stores in the Short North, Tiger Tree, for example, be relocated into Wonderland? And what will happen to High Street? So we got into that a little bit, but yeah. Wouldn't it be tempting, I mean, depending on its success, for certain, you know, some places to move out?
I think that's a great question. In our early introduction that I not only work on the board, but I'm also a small business owner in the right. in the Short North. Actually, just recently opening this summer or this fall. I think what
is that the West Spirits?
Middle West Spirits,
right?
Yes. I think what we're trying to create at Wonderland is something that is distinctive and unique, and it's not being designed to compete. To Josh's point, it's not being designed to compete with the offering on High Street. And when we talk about High Street, whether it's spanning from the Arena District to South Campus Gateway. I think there's a recognition for retailers and homeowners and property owners there that that there's room in the neighborhood for an opportunity to, I guess, grow the offering. Right now at the south end of High Street, we have a fairly developed high-end, high-touch feel retail and mixed-use development plan. At the north end of the Short North, it's a lot more accessible, it's younger, it's more affordable. And then just beyond that, getting to South Campus Gateway, it translates or transitions into basically a university demo. And what Wonderland will do, I think, is basically offer an entry point for people to all three of those neighborhoods. I think what attracted me to the project very, very early on this last winter was the fact that it is an economic development driver. It's not just about creating something that has a cultural impact for the city, but it's about actually putting people to work and pairing kind of this aspirational artist with the people in the community that it can actually help create activation and sell those products and services. And I think that's good for the Short North. I think it's good for the city. And living owning mixed-use property in the Short North, living there, owning a business there, I couldn't be more excited about the kind of clientele, not just people that love art, but people that love Columbus and want to see something new and different, something that I think organically has manifested into something that is kind of quintessentially the identity of Columbus. When we moved here, it's the very first thing that we noticed that, Columbus is very good at incubating. It's very good at incubating and innovating. And I always laugh when I hear these conversations and debates about this identity crisis, because I'm like, it's right in front of you. Mm-hmm. And Wonderland, again, so organically manifested from the grassroots, exactly what the city has been trying to put its finger on, but in a way that programmatically in a way and structurally that isn't meant to be continually looking for handouts. I mean, we live in an environment and certainly a state that's both manufacturing heavy and agriculturally heavy.
But not heavy on either, or at least particularly manufacturing as it would like to be.
Exactly.
Anymore.
But the coffers are low, and I think that the climate for giving is also low right now. There's a fatigue out there for giving. People are trying to make ends meet. And what made this project so interesting to me is that not only tapped into something that was authentically Columbus, this idea of incubation and innovation, but in such a way that it is sustainable and self-sustainable, that it's about putting people back to work, filling those coffers again, and kind of extending that story of what's uniquely Columbus.
Well, how do you pay for it then? Because when you're talking about keeping rents low so that artists and people that don't have a lot of money can afford to work there and trade there, how do you generate the revenue that would keep sustain it in the way that you would have to in a place like that?
Well, I think what we've kind of tapped into, it's going back to the nature of what we're trying to do. There's a very traditional element to what we're trying to do that looks and breathes and sounds and smells like a traditional nonprofit. And we do that because there are certain regulatory and legal responsibilities that a nonprofit has. But in many ways, this is a new mold, and there's an energy to a piece of that project, and I think from the folks that are contributing, a lot of effort to reevaluate the way that we do that, and because of that, we have a tremendous amount of potential donor bases from the grassroots level. I think we're almost bottom heavy at this point because the visibility of the project is so grassroots. It's almost like building by a village, rather than a traditional fundraising plan, which would be start with you know your corporate givers and try to work backwards and make the small givers feel good about what they do. This really has kind of turned that on its head. And what we're trying to do now, I think, is create a messaging strategy that that embodies that built by a village, by the people, for the people. Paired with this idea of it being an economic development engine, as well as a gateway for attracting and retaining young people in Columbus to activate the middle tier and the high tier givers. So the requirements of folks that want to give a substantial amount of money don't change for an organization like ours just because we want to break the mold. We still have responsibilities to be transparent. We still have fiduciary responsibilities to ensure that we're getting into agreements and building a structure that long-term will be sustainable from a financial feasibility model. But I think, again, the story is very different, and the story is activating at all three of those levels.
Okay.
That allows us to fundraise from the base as well as use traditional methods through development and grants, discretionary funds.
So your traditional big givers, though, your investors, the big investors that you're looking for, will have to be completely on board and you know, conceptually. It won't be just necessarily just about making a buck. I mean, they have to care
right.
about,
yeah. But,
you know.
But from where they're standing, we want to show that we can operate in the black.
Right.
And we think that we have to stand on that platform because one of our main tenets is to teach young creatives that entrepreneurship is a viable career path. And we don't feel like we can do that if we're not ourselves viable. Mm-hmm. Another mold that we're sort of trying to break is that we're seeking seed money. We're not necessarily hoping to go back to these same people every year and say, mm-hmm. you've got to bail us out again. We want to show that we're an organization that can operate efficiently like a business.
I was going to say, in fact, you know, when the board was first developed last March, I think there was a little bit of shock and awe with those of us that came in after the building had been purchased for what had actually been accomplished. But part of it was that it actually felt a lot more like a startup, a traditional startup, than it did the beginning of a nonprofit. And again, I think that goes back to why. While we've been incredibly transparent, we've also been a little more quiet the last 6 months because it's been taking a step back and saying, you know, how do we put together the infrastructure of an organization that's able to manage the 15 heads of the business? But I think our meetings and our conversations are much more in line with what you would see in a Tech Columbus than you would see at a traditional nonprofit organization.
Yeah, when you first started out, when the conversations that I was hearing and whatever kind of vibe I was getting from it was, I wasn't sure it was a nonprofit. Mm-hmm. I didn't know. It wasn't clear mm-hmm. to me at first. Let's talk a little bit more about the architecture. There's architectural renderings on the website now. The first impression I got was, didn't we just tear something like that down the street? It's a big brick building with hardly any windows except at the very top, I think. I might even be wrong about that. It reminded me of City Center, and I'm wondering about what do you think about how do you make that building interact with the community around it, because that was the big flaw.
Well, part of it a Lazarus in.
Yeah, we're not going to put a Lazarus
in. In an arch thing, something to walk over the street with.
The building is actually it's surprisingly airy, I guess is the right word, inside. There's actually running the whole length of the building parallel to 4th. There's for the bottom floor, there's a whole row of skylight type windows that aren't visible from the street in mm-hmm. any way that really serve to open it up. all of the glass on the front, on the Fourth Street side of the building, is going to go from glass block that's a little more opaque to traditional store window, so that we will hopefully we'll have visibility for our retailers on the front part of the building. And our designers, the folks, Bharat and Bhakti from BBCO, they did our initial renderings, and their vision and their take on our vision was to create kind of a city within a building, almost. They pictured it like a, laying it out like a town, and I think that a lot of their vision served to take the parts of the building that, like I said, weren't immediately obvious, that it was kind of open and airy feeling, and just enhancing that vibe. So I think it's going to be very, very far from City Center once everybody gets a chance to come in and see what's actually going on.
I think the other component of that is that it is Italian Village, which is it is a protected historic district in the city, and there are very specific guidelines that we have to follow in order to be in compliance with what the commission wants, and all of our ideas are presented to the city. They are defended. There's a commission that reviews that, an historic preservation officer, and you'd be amazed at how many folks in the neighborhood and the city actually love the building just as it is. Now our hope is that over time, as proof of concept, we're able to refine and fine tune that, especially on the Fourth Avenue side where our retailers are at.
We have an email from Mike. He writes, if you do not already know about it, I'd suggest checking out the organization Hiroshima Mon Amour in Turin, Italy.
Excellent. Thank you.
They are housed in an old school building. They were able to work out a deal with the city for a very low lease. They run two galleries, a radio station, a cafe, and a performance venue. And then from Twitter, they write, I am listening to the Wonderland guys on the radio, and I can't wait. I wish it was open now. Hurry up, boys.
We do,
so,
too.
I guess fundraising. Real quick, we don't have a lot of time, Adam, but can you just tell us what you are doing with fundraising? We just have about a minute, and we'll post everything you need to know about it on WOSU.org/allsides.
We have three main fundraising initiatives that are helping us sort of start some of that seeding that we were talking about. The biggest one, and I encourage everybody to get online every day. You can vote twice a day. We are up for a Pepsi Refresh grant. You can go to refresheverything.com/Wonderland, and that could be up to $250,000 for us to fix up the facility. We also have an event on October 17th that is a food cart food court, where we're asking all the different food carts in town to show up to our parking lot. And then we also had a design competition for T-shirts, and we're going to start selling those very shortly on our website and at the food cart food court event.
And they'll be at Tiger Tree, Middle West, and Candle Lab.
Tiger Tree. Okay, well, we'll have links to all of that stuff if you want more information. Thanks to Adam Brulé, Andrew Dodson, Josh Quinn, and Brady Konya for joining us today. I appreciate it very much.
Thanks for having
us. Thank you,
Ann.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.